Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Rebecca F., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Could everyone mute your phone, please? Today is Monday, December 8th, 2014. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Chapter 2, There is a Solution, on page 20, the first paragraph beginning with, You may already. Today's readers are reading the OA 12 steps is Chrissy M. Reading the OA 12 traditions is Anne Marie M. And reading the literature are Sharon R. S., Carmela G., and Deanna B. The reference number for Sunday, December 7th, is 7090. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Chrissy M. to read the OA 12 steps.
Hi, I'm Chrissy M., newly recovered compulsive overeater and anorexic from New Jersey. Here are the steps we took which are suggested of a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Chrissy M. I will now ask Anne Marie M. to read the OA 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone, and Rebecca, thank you for your service. My name is Anne Marie M. I am a recovered compulsive eater in South Carolina. The 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry this message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, OA Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne Maria. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speaker's, should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in Chapter 2, There is a Solution, on page 20, the first paragraph beginning with, You May Already. I will now ask Sharon R.S. to get us started by reading two paragraphs ending with, As We See Them.
Good morning, and thank you so much. I'm very glad to be here with you on the line. I'm Sharon R.S., and I am a recovering overeater. You may already have asked yourself why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking. Doubtless, you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you need to be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done. Before going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them. So now we're getting ready to review, and then we're going to go into the program of recovery. But here I'd like to look at the phrase, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. We have recovered. And it's hopeless. It's not seemingly hopeless, but it says from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And I tell you, the way I ate food, it was with a vengeance. There was no thought. There was nothing that could stop me. I had to have that food. It was I was compelled. I had to do it. I had to eat that food. And yet here I am for over 13 years. I have not been compelled. I was just thinking about it just yesterday, and I thought, wow, I really can go anywhere. I can cook food for my family. I can have it in the house, and it doesn't call me. I don't want it. I don't like I used to. And I have actually recovered from this disease, something that seemed impossible 13 years ago. What changed? And we're going to talk about that in the next paragraphs to come. But what I want to talk about is that we can recover, even though it seems impossible. We can get recovered, which means that we do not have to eat compulsively. We can eat our food that that our body needs, and then we can go on with the business of living. And the other thing is that this is a condition of the mind as well as the body. Our body and our mind are affected by this disease. My mind would tell me I needed the food. My body would call for it. If I stayed off the food, if I didn't eat it, then I didn't, as long as I stayed away from the food, I didn't need the food. But then my mind would tell me that I need it. So this is a very complicated disease, and we have a very clear way to get recovered. The other thing about getting recovered from compulsive overeating is that when we recover, we can get on with the business of living. Food is not driving and directing and leading us. It's not the only thing that we think about. But we still have that disease. I can recover, but I still, underneath it all, if I take that first bite, I can be right back where I am. So what we're going to talk about in the next paragraph is first we're going to review this question of the disease, and then we're going to talk about the program of recovery. So hold on. Help is on the way. We can get recovered, and we have a clear way to do that. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sharon.
Charles from New York. Hi, Sharon.
Lorna from Pittsburgh.
Mary A.
Hello.
Okay, so I was going to say, would anyone like to share on these two paragraphs?
Sorry.
And That's okay. I've heard Charles, Lauren.
Lorna.
I heard Charles, Lauren S., and Mary. I didn't catch the first initials of your last name, but when you speak, you can repeat that. Go ahead, Charles.
Good morning. Thank you, Rebecca, for your continued service. Good morning, visionaries. My name is Charles H., a recovered visionary just for today. And, I thank God, my higher power, for waking me up, first of all. And I'd just like to drill down on... we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. One thing must thank God for a recovered sponsor, right? He suggested this to me. Two things I got to worry about: what goes in my mouth and what comes out of my mouth. And the tongue don't have any muscles, but it kills. It kills. But my mind is. My mind kills. See, my mind was hopeless before I got discipline. And the discipline that I got is through working the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of this program. And this is these two paragraphs are setting us up to get to that spot. What do I have to do? I don't have to do anything. I could stay here until, you know, the obsession hits me again, and then back on the cyclone in Coney Island. So, every morning, right, like my mind says, Charles, what do we have to do? It asks me a question. What do I have to do? I need to get to a meeting. I need to help somebody else, and it ain't got to be somebody just particularly in program, just in the world, and also doing a daily 10-step, which is working the steps, forgive somebody, because every day I offend people, and people offend me. I know that from the jump, you know. I know that from the jump. So what do I have to do? Every day I have to, for me, to be recovered, to stay in a recovered state from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Like, I love how it's said all the time, if food and weight was my problem, white knuckle abstinence would be my solution. But life is my problem. Living life, on life's terms. So we should tell you what we have done before going into a detailed discussion. I love this. This is like this is like the prep. It's like the prep. It's getting us prepared. It's getting us ready. And I just love this. What do I have to do? What do I have to do? I got to do everything to protect my recovery one day at a time. Not cured, recovered one day at a time. And with that, I'd like to wish everybody a great week. God bless you all, and keep recovered. Peace.
Thanks, Charles H. Lauren S., you're next.
Hey. Lauren S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Pittsburgh. And right now where I am in my process is, since I went through the book last time in that ended in June, more agnosticism has cropped up. And what's been beaten down on me like a ton of bricks is my weight obsession with weight and body, which was alleviated for the greater part of the past couple years. And I have recovered from my obsession to ingest toxic foods. But I have not recovered from other weight obsession, other things that's making me still want to run the show. And so what we just read gives me the promise of, okay, Lauren, just keep following along. Just keep going on in your workshop, because I'm doing my fourth big book workshop right now. I'm in step one. And I feel like I did when I just started the work. I don't really know what it would be like to live without weight obsession. It's a little freaky, but I just do the work, right? If you're still obsessing about food, it's weird to know what it's like to not think about food. It's weird to know what it would be like to be recovered, but you just do the work almost robotically. You just do it, because what else is there? And I don't know if I'll ever be recovered from my weight obsession, but I know God's so great. He can relieve me of anything. So I'm just going to keep trucking along like I did the first time I cracked open this book with you guys. And with that, it will pass.
Thank you, Lauren S. Mary.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. I hope this telephone is clear. Wow, to be recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And that's surely me. You know, I went out on a relapse, and I am back after 14 months. And I can truly say I'm so recovered from the obsession of mind. You know, to be really recovered, to be around the foods that I used to ingest. I can cook them. I can make these things for my family. It's truly a blessing that they don't call to me. And, you know, I was thinking of, we keep hearing that we have to put the food down. Put the food down before you do the steps. Well, I think you can still do the steps while you're even in the food, if you've been a relapser over the years. But what the point that I was thinking was being for putting the food down is how God said to me, you know, the small inner voice, just keep, you know, to have a spiritual awakening. Just as I can't force the sun to come up in the morning, God said to me, you cannot force a spiritual awakening, Mary, but I promise you, if you just keep coming on these meetings and listening to me to speak through the people and the literature, you will have it. And, you know, the big book truly tells us, that it is when the grace of God enters a man or woman and dispels the obsession, that which he could not do before. And it also says we don't know why we pick up. We don't even really know the day. So to me, it's so important when I share with others to say, just keep connected. Keep connected. Keep listening. Keep dialing in so that you will have your spiritual awakening. And I remember for me when I crawled back to my fellowship, I didn't know. I didn't know, but I remembered God saying that to me. I didn't know when I'd have a day when it miraculously was there. And then to come to this group and really understand that I will never be cured of the allergy, but I can be cured of this obsession of the mind. And I am so grateful. And I'm so grateful for all the wisdom I learned from God through all of you. God bless you all.
Mary, what's the first initial of your last name? I guess she muted. Would anyone else like to share on these two paragraphs?
This is Larry.
Sarah.
Yeah, this is Vasa.
Can I please ask what page you guys read from the big book?
Page 20.
Thank you.
I heard Larry, Sarah, and Vasa. Larry, go right ahead.
Thanks so much. Appreciate your service. Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. You know, the sentence here, again, that I want to focus on is, it is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. And, you know, I read that many times in the first several years when I came into program. And, you know, but nonetheless, you know, I still, for me, I was trying to do it myself. And, you know, I read that, but it didn't sink in. You know, the purpose of the book to answer such questions specifically, it tells us exactly, precisely what we need to do to get well. What do I have to do? You know, and for some reason, I think for me, maybe it resonates with you, it was the ego, you know, was so powerful that I could actually read words like that, but nonetheless, I'm going to find my own way, my softer way, you know, because I couldn't feel uncomfortable for very long. And so I looked for shortcuts, you know, I looked for easier ways to do this rather than, you know, follow these instructions precisely. And I remember when I finally, the overnight success that I was in this program after 5 years of struggling, you know, I remember actually working through the steps precisely, sequentially. And I remember I was in my kitchen because, you know, something happened to me. I had a vital spiritual transformation. And I remember thinking, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. I wasn't angry like you've got to be kidding, but really, that's what it was all the time. I was looking for great complexity to a problem that I thought was very complex. And you know, these instructions, all that was required was that I follow these instructions and I would come into a new relationship with my Creator that would enter my heart and my mind in a way that, sure, it was going to extract that obsession of mine. That was one of many things that it did for me. But there were so many other gifts that this process was going to bring to my life. But, you know, too often I think what happened, certainly happened for me, is the ego was so strong that I was just going to work the tools. I was going to try to do anything to divert my attention. I would run through grocery stores. Don't look, you know, drive down the road. Don't look at that place that used to pull me in like a magnet, right? I don't have to live my life that way anymore because I followed the instructions precisely and I'm nothing special. Nothing special. This program is not for just the special. This is for anyone who follows the instructions precisely. So anyways, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous because it did indeed save my life. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. Sarah W.
Thank you, Rebecca, for your service. This is Sarah W., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. So grateful to be sober today and to be abstinent and to be in my right mind. You know, thank you, God. Thank you, God. You know, I really, when I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, of my journey through in recovery. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, how badly do we want it, you know, do we want it enough to try the things that are being asked of us, you know? And I just want to welcome anybody that's new on the line and especially those that are coming back. It's so hard to come back. You know, I remember myself, I had very beautiful abstinence for about 6 years, lost all my weight, you know, 80, 90 pounds, really felt good, you know. And then I moved, and I didn't have my recovery community. I had been, you know, utilizing the Big Book, but I really never learned to do a 10, 11, and 12, and that was where I kind of got off track. But, you know, what I can say is that it really does, it happens, you know, that God does this to us, for us, if we're willing to do the work. And, you know, for me today, instead of saying that my relapse, which was a long relapse, like 8 years, you know, really helped me a lot because, you know, I have a lot of compassion for people. And at the same time, I know in my mind that I will always be a compulsive overeater. I will never be different from that. And that I'm recovered today, and that's a daily reprieve. That's all I have. And it's contingent on if I stay in these beautiful steps that we have. And, you know, it is really all about change. So, you know, I would just like to invite those that are kind of struggling to keep their mind open to what this beautiful program can offer us. You know, I can talk all day about my behaviors with the food and how I, you know, destroyed my body and, you know, got high blood pressure, COPD, you know, how badly I felt. But I think the worst of the problem was that I was living in this prison that I made of myself because I had no relationships that were healthy. I was a very angry, unhappy woman. And that is what, even more than the food stuff, the food is important, but my God, you know, I had no life. And I was really making a lot of people around me miserable. So grateful today for what the program has offered me and for all of you. But I do realize today that the fellowship is not what is going to keep me healthy in my abstinence. It is truly working the 12 steps. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah W. Vasa O.
Yes. Thank you, Rebecca, and good morning, everybody. And I'm Vasa O., recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Florida. Wow, find out how to recover from, I was curious, I really was so curious to find out how to recover from this hopeless condition of the obsession of the mind and the body, and that was me, that hopeless, helpless person that I struggled for years and years and tried kind of all kinds of forms of diets to put the food down, but I could never keep it down. I could keep it down for a little bit. I remember being off the sugars. I'll just wrap it up. That's my time. But anyways, I remember being abstinent even before coming from the program from the sugars, but I was not abstinent. The compulsion was there, still the obsession. So I always kept on going back to it. But again, I had suffered enough, many years. And I had a lot of discipline in my life. You know, I was a mother. I could clean and cook, take care of my children. But when it came to the food, I had no discipline. I didn't know I had a disease, you know. So what I needed to do for myself, I listened to my sponsor. I said, she must know more than I do because look at me and look at where she is, you know. So I took her suggestions to surrender to God and to immerse myself into the program. But for me, I remember her stressing to me, you gotta keep abstinent, I'll just wrap it up, and you gotta stay, you know, in order to work the steps, you gotta put the food down. I listened. I didn't know any better. So I said, oh, okay, I'll do that, you know. But I have heard people in recovery, while they were still working the steps, some of them became abstinent while they were working the steps. So it gave me a better understanding. But I love following the directions in the big book, and it's a paragraph at a time because my mind does not absorb a lot. Like if we read a page or two pages, I get confused, you know. So I love reading one paragraph at a time, and I love the directions. They're right here. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa O. I think we should move on. So I will now ask Carmela G. to read the next two paragraphs, beginning with how many times and ending with different from ours.
Thank you, Rebecca. This is Carmela G. from New York. How many times people have said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. Now these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. And I'll just take a few moments to reflect on that. This is Carmela G. He could stop if he wanted. How many times we said that to ourselves? And I said it to myself. And after an eating binge, I would promise, tomorrow I'm not picking up a thing. And tomorrow never came. Well, I had a life-threatening illness, and the doctor said I had to lose 100 pounds. That seemed impossible to me. And it was impossible for me because I didn't realize at the time that I was a compulsive overeater. I didn't want to realize. I was in denial. I didn't want to admit that I was hopeless. I wanted to think I was powerful and I could do it. Well, it was only until I surrendered and I gave it up to God and said, God, please help me, that I was fortunate enough to lose over 160 pounds. And for that, I'm grateful every single day. But the weight loss wasn't it. It just wasn't doing it. I wanted something more. So working the big book a little bit harder, every single day, following those directions, one day at a time, acting as if when I didn't believe, trying when I wasn't sure, surrendering every single morning, asking God, my higher power, please direct me. Let me do thy will, not my will. Giving up that power that I thought I was so powerful. I thought because I had degrees and a profession that I knew it all. Well, only when I surrendered, now that I've had the weight loss, completed the steps, do I feel such a joy that I want to spread and I want to share. And thank you so much for letting me share that. Have a good day. I pass.
All right, Charles from New York again.
Anna H.
Kathy K.
Sally.
Kim.
Deanna B.
I'll be honest with you. I was just wanting to thank Carmela G, and so I got a little thrown off. I heard Charles, and so thank you, Carmela G. I heard Charles. I heard what I thought was maybe Anna, but I might have missed the beginning of her name.
Anna H.
Is it Anna H?
It is.
Okay. And who?
I have an idea. Do you want to thank Carmela and then let everyone say it again?
I can't hear.
Kim B. Kim.
Kim.
And Kathy K.
Right.
And Sally.
Sally, yeah. Okay. All right, so I have Charles H., Anna H., Deanna B., Kim G., Kathy K., and Sally A. Did someone else speak up that I missed? Okay, great. Charles H., if you don't mind, since this is your second share, I'm going to ask you to try to be very brief.
Again, I will. Charles H. again, recovered visionary. How many times have people said to us, I can take it or leave it? Why can't he? Because I'm a compulsive overeater. Why don't you eat like a gentleman? I can't eat like a gentleman. Without vision for you, I couldn't do anything like a gentleman. You know, and I just, that's, you know, it's the truth. I just couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it at first. And when I tried to, fighting for white knuckle abstinence, I couldn't do it. I just could not do it. And when I got to that state that I could not do it, that's when I had a God opening. I had a God opening in my body and my mind to allow me to do it one day at a time. With that, I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Charles H. Anna H., you're next.
Good morning, everyone. This is Anna H. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm recovered for today and one day at a time in this program. I just want to piggyback on this reading and what's already been said. I absolutely went through my life thinking that I could control this, if I could just have the willpower to control this. And that's what they're saying here. You know, so many of us for so long said, oh, you know what, we can control this. And I had people in my life who, you know, give those frothy emotional appeals like, can't you please, you know, we love you, we care about you, your health, you know, can you please, like, not do this, you know, not do this to yourself. And then also people saying, oh, you know what, it's just your willpower. It takes a lot of discipline. And you know what, maybe you're not disciplined enough. And that used to really do two things. It would really make me angry because there was a point in time that I had willpower enough to control this disease. And that was at a point that was before, like the book says, habit becomes obsession. But this disease is progressive. And it wasn't until it progressed enough for me that it progressed to the point where I could not control it with my own will anymore. I would wake up in the morning and avoid eating for as long as possible because I knew the choice that I was going to make was going to be one that was going to not be something that was healthy and felt good to put in my body, and I knew it was going to be a reading situation. So it came to a point for me where I had to be willing to surrender and turn it over to God and say, I don't got this. I can't do this. And the beauty is the big book has given the instructions that I need every day. Whenever I have question, I can look, and there is always something there, especially 83 through 88 every morning. It even tells me what to pray for, you know, that I can ask for different thoughts. I always wanted different actions and different results, but I can ask for different thoughts today. And I didn't know that. So anyway, with that, I'll pass. Thank you for being here on the line this morning, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Anna H. Deanna B.
Thank you. This is Deanna B. from Chicago, a recovered compulsive eater. Thank you for your service. I just had to say that all my life, I know that I have overeaten, but all my life, I also thought, like a lot of us, that I had no control, just like those people that kept saying, don't you have, you know, a little willpower, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. And it did. It used to make me angry. And, you know, and I can blame anything on my compulsive eating. And even in the program many years ago, I thought I should be able to do this myself. I don't know where that, you know, it's like I just didn't want to stop. When I came into Visions, I believe it was in May, I had three or four months clean abstinence. I crawled back into OA on my hands and knees and was willing. I was willing to write my food down. I was willing to call it in. I was willing to talk to people. And with the instructions in the big book, like everyone has says it right there. It tells me what to do. And the food, unbelievably, is neutral. Like a lot of us have said, you know, I can keep it around. It doesn't matter. I can go any place and do anything. And I can feel my feelings better, like somebody has always said. And what one thing that I cannot do is let things set with me and not do a 10 step on it. And being fairly new to this, recovered, you know, I didn't know what I was sitting in, and I'm so grateful that God saw fit for the food to still remain neutral and allow me to work through that. And not, I let it lay in my mind for 3 or 4 days, and it was very difficult. So I just wanted to share with everyone that, you know, I'm just so grateful that you're here, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Deanna B. Kim G.
Good morning, Rebecca. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. We see these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. So these are not questions that compulsive overeaters ask other compulsive overeaters. These are questions non-compulsive overeaters ask us. And why is that? Because they look at me and they see what the food does to me and they're wondering why I do it. I know what the food does for me and I'm wondering why they don't do it. So I would get tortured by these people that told me, for example, well, why don't you put one of your fat pictures on the fridge? And that way when you go there, you'll basically shame yourself not to open the fridge. Or maybe put a picture of your favorite supermodel on the fridge and that'll motivate you not to open the fridge. Just cut it in half. Don't you want a boyfriend? Come on, just have the whole grain, low-fat, diabetic form of that food and you will be fine. And they're not doing that to be mean. They're doing that because that works for people who don't have our problem. We're going to learn next about the moderate drinkers who can take it or leave it alone. The hard drinkers who, with sufficient reason, can stop. And if those people are looking at someone like me, they're mystified because these questions work for people who do not have my problem. And I get frustrated why it doesn't work. And I was thinking of a simple example. My youngest brother is insulin-dependent diabetic, and I can't remember. Diabetes 1 and 2, one's insulin-dependent, one's not. And if my brother, who is an insulin-dependent diabetic, does a support group with people who are non-insulin-dependent, and they start telling them, come on, Scott, all I do is control my diet. I don't have to take insulin. You just need to suck it up. Don't take the insulin and just do what I do because it works for me. I mean, a doctor would shoot him down. My brother would die from that advice. And I have to recognize that I have to know who I am. I am the real deal. I am the real compulsive overeater. If I try to stay abstinent on what other people who do not have my problem are doing, then I'm going to die. Because I've got a secret for everyone on the line. Diets do work. Restricting calories and mild exercise works unless you have the twofold illness, allergies of the body and obsession of the mind. And I feel very compelled to say this because we are talking about specific directions. And the specific directions are you must put the food down first. And my experience trying not to believe that was that I never recovered. And the people who tell me that are people who flounder in and out of the food years and years and eventually die in this disease. It's very specific. We put the food down first to arrest the allergy, and then we address the obsession of the mind with the steps. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim G. Kathy K., you're next.
Thank you, Rebecca, for your service. This is Kathy K. from Massachusetts, a compulsive overeater, recovered. You know, I read these two paragraphs, and all I can think is how grateful I am that I was finally brought to my knees and finally accepted my powerlessness. Because for most of my life, up until the age of 40 or so, I gained and lost the same 15 to 20 pounds over and over again. And so when I was up in my weight, I just thought, okay, it's time to diet again, and I lost it again, but I never kept it off. I then became diabetic, type 1 diabetic, and, I was really killing myself with those binges. I was doing damage to my organs, and I don't know how much longer I would have lived a healthy life as a result of my compulsive overeating. And people would, and especially people close to me would say, you've got to not do that. You're hurting yourself. And they were powerless too. And it was only through listening to all of you and studying the big book that I really came to acceptance. I took step one, and it was not easy, and it took a long time, but it was through reading and listening and writing that I was able to finally accept I was not one of those who could control my food. I'm so grateful for Overeaters Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous and for all of you. Thank you. That's half.
Thank you, Kathy K. Sally A.
Thank you, Rebecca, for your service to all of us. This is Sally A. In South Jersey, a recovered compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph because it really does drive home what goes on with my family and with even with some of my friends. They're asking the questions, why? If you look back, if you pull back from the page, you'll see why. I can't take it or leave it. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Why? And I was taught when I was going to, in part of my studies in the university, in cognitive behavioral therapy, we're taught never ask the question why. Why is a shame-based question. And so frame your question, but do not frame it without using the word why, because the word why has implications of shame. And so when people are asking these questions, why can't he? Why don't you try this? Why don't you drink like a gentleman? These are questions that come to me all the time from my children, who are not children, they're grown adults. You know, and what I've learned recently in this past holiday, Thanksgiving, and here we are in the middle of a lot of holidays, so perhaps you're in the same experience that I'm having. I've learned recently that for years my children were judging me and even angry at me and putting me down because I gained 110 pounds in about 10 years, and they were angry because I was their mentor. I was very much a strong leader to my own children. And here I was, vacuous. I was lost in the food, and they couldn't understand that. Interestingly, here I am now. I've lost 80 of those pounds, and I'm now weighing and measuring, something I have not done publicly. I've been weighing and measuring privately in my home, but I was never willing to weigh and measure publicly. And what's interesting about this is that now my children are, they're asking me these why questions. Why do you have to do that? Mom, that's embarrassing. Why do you have to do that? So now they're not asking the why questions because I'm fat. Now they're asking the why questions because I'm trying to get well. And interestingly, we see on page 21 of the 12 and 12, it says at the bottom of the page, until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. And in the big book, we see the difference between precarious abstinence and entire abstinence. And what I'm learning is that I can't care anymore what people think about Sally A. I just can't care. I have to know who I am. I have to know in public and in private that I'm not a normal eater. I have an eating disorder, and I understand that today. And it doesn't matter anymore what anyone thinks of Sally anymore. It just matters that I know, and I'm not affected by the shame-based comments anymore from my children or anyone else. It doesn't matter. What matters is I don't want to live on the edge of a cliff and have a precarious sobriety anymore. I want to have entire abstinence. Thanks for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally A. Well, this is Rebecca, and since we only have a couple of minutes, I hesitate to open the floor, so that's my cue to share. And I'm Rebecca F., a recovered compulsive overeater from Connecticut. And I really appreciate everyone's enthusiasm to speak on the line this morning. Thank you all for sharing. And I get so much out of being at this meeting and, in particular, being of service. If you are eligible, if you have the abstinence requirements and you haven't stepped up to the plate, I encourage you to do so because it really enhances my program, and I imagine it does to all of us who do volunteer on the line. I looked back on page 19 just prior to the paragraphs we read today, where it says, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions, our attitudes, which make us more useful to others, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And now we talk about how we live in a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. And it's just so important for us to stay to be recovered, to become recovered, and to stay recovered, to have real tolerance and respect of people's ignorance and misunderstanding. And I remember that I was ignorant and didn't understand, and I am the compulsive overeater. So how could I expect others to be anything different when they haven't done this work and they don't know what I've learned from those of us who have gone before me? And it also reminds me that if I was ignorant and misunderstood about my own disease of compulsive overeating, I'm ignorant and still misunderstand about other things in the world, just like everybody else. So, you know what they say, love and tolerance is our code. And I'm just as ignorant and misunderstanding as the next guy about a lot of things. And by the grace of God, I've been given an opportunity to see that about myself and recognize that in others so that I can be tolerant and patient and know that we all have this problem. And with that, I'll pass. And it's time for us to close. So thank you to everyone who has shared. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Deanna B. has graciously offered to fill in for Susie K., and will you, Deanna, please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Deanna B., are you getting the page, 164?
Rebecca, this is Melanie. I can do that.
This is Deanna B. I was talking, didn't realize I had not unmuted.
Okay,
our book,
Melanie, and go ahead, Deanna. Thank you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.